Hey, this is a dark tangent, organizer of DEF CON. You're about to listen to some speeches from DEF CON 3, held July 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Tropicana Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1995. Now, the Tropicana has since been renovated. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, all rights reserved, the dark tangent, and DEF CON Communications. Permission is expressly granted, though, for educational, non-profit use. If you have any more questions about DEF CON, or want to send me some email about the copyright status, please email me at dt@defcon.org, or the website is www.defcon.org. Now, kick back, get ready for some good speeches, and thanks for supporting it.
Okay, is this working? Ah, yes, we've got it. We'll use this one. I'll trip over the floor 5 times, and it will disappear. First thing, I understand it was a complaint last year that not enough people, can we get this turned down a tad? Not enough people that scored points on the Spot the Fed contest. So in the discussions and getting organized for this year, I said, well, I'm going to make this easy. In case you haven't noticed, this is a Spot the Fed t-shirt with a bullseye target on the back. On the bottom line says, retired, 1/2 point. So everybody in the room now has a 1/2 point. And you can't throw me out of the conference. Not yet, anyway. For 20 minutes, maybe you want to. First thing, did anybody fly Air Reno in here? Nobody flew Air Reno? You're in the wrong place. That's over on the other side of the state line. Anybody fly United? Good. I flew in United, too. Guess what I found out? I know what United's version of After Dark's toaster is. It's called a 737 with no air conditioning. Needless to say, not a pleasant journey from Denver to Las Vegas. And a cool 119 degrees. Well, the networks are heating up, too, right? What TBA says you can talk about anything. What I want to do is just talk briefly about what I think are some major concerns and things that are going to happen in the near future. And I mean like 3 years from now. They've already started. But what I want to talk about is whose networks are these, really? There are three players that I see in this. For those of you that don't know anything about me, somehow in 1990, they looked around and said, we need somebody in the FBI to know something about computers. Well, I had been using them for about, well, let me put it this way. VIC 20 was when I started. That high-powered machine. I remember dot matrix printers. And then they came along with something called 24-pin dot matrix printers. And we said, yay, we got some really neat stuff here. That lasted about 6 months, and then he said, oh, we got lasers. So now we got lasers. So things have improved over the years. But who, when we talk about networks, by the way, I'm not talking about the Internet. That's only part of what I'm talking about. What I'm looking at are all the networks from the LAN level up. WANs, MANs, GANs, because that's what we got to look at. But anyway, because of my background, which was not mainframe-oriented. I went to college, like all good FBI agents do. Guess what my degree's in? Not even close. We're getting close. Hey, history! A BA in history. Wasn't even a BS. It stands for something else. Bullshit. No. But anyway, I majored in history. Frankly, we didn't even have computers back then. I remember the slide rule days. A calculator was $500. Now, I'm only 29 years old. Anybody believe that? No. But anyway, I had done some tweaking the billing algorithm cases back in 1979, which was a fraud against the government by a major company. And plus, I'd been using them for essentially all of 1980s. And so they tapped me and said, we need somebody to look at this whole computer crime stuff we're doing and see where we are. Well, three guesses. I can tell you, because you already know, what we found out is DOS, Okay. Now, anybody in this room think DOS is an operating system? I don't think so. Maybe a few. Okay, we got a few. Raise their hands. There we go. So anyway, what we found out was we had a lot of, out of 10,000 FBI agents, there were probably about 1,000 that had been trained in DOS. Did anybody know anything about the Internet or any networks above a local area network? The answer, quite simply, was no. So the first thing we did was decide, one, is we need to have a special group, which turned out to be the FBI's National Computer Crime Squad. That was formed in February 1992. It was centralized in one place. Now, I'm sure a lot of you in this room have heard about that group. The group was essentially formed and centralized to put the expertise in one place to deal with the upper-level network intrusions in the packet switch networks and the telecommunications networks. Bob has said, and Wynn is going to tell you in the future, and I will not dispute any of it, they are absolutely wide open. 95% of the networks in the United States are totally insecure, and they handle very critical but not classified stuff. Classified networks probably aren't in too bad a shape, but realistically, what runs this country is the unclassified networks and the telecommunications networks, all of which, with what Bob said, before without those, how do you function without a telephone these days? They had the power to go out in Georgetown in northwest D.C. Two nights ago. Utterly, you have the potential for, that's a good idea, get away from that mic. Utter chaos. That's the potential problems we see out there. Now, for all of us in the past, the Internet particularly, is basically your world and our world, right? Belongs to all of us. Is that true anymore? I would suggest to you probably not, and it's going to become less and less so. And yet, I think we need to be aware of the other players in this equation, because that's what's going to change where everything is and where it's going to. And I'll open this up to questions here in a minute, because there are a whole wide range of issues, cryptology has been raised and everything else. But essentially what we're starting to see is, and I think it happened 2 years ago with digital telephony when it first came up in the Clipper issues. You then begin to see another player come into the field. Up to that point, remember, I think we all agree, the networks were open to everybody, right? Essentially you could go anywhere you wanted to, probably pretty much do anything you wanted to, within reason. Probably 2 years ago you started to see a shift. You got a second player in the equation called the U.S. government, whether you liked it or not. There's a third player that's starting to come into the equation, and I want to take these one, two, three at a time and ring the telephone. No. There's a third player out there, I suggest to you, that is probably more important than anything we've talked about out here, and that's the business community. First thing is, let's start with us as the user community. What is starting to happen? I was in Toronto last week. I don't know if anybody saw an article about it, but they were talking about universities are getting ready to shut down and censor email coming out of university systems. Why? Because of hate mail problems. Part of which comes out of the Oklahoma City thing, which we've already heard a little bit about. That's one infringement you're starting to see. Universities historically, and this is a big problem for them, believe in open systems. Everybody has access to everything, freedom of speech, everything. The kind of the bed for everything. If they're going to take that away, what's next? Now you're starting to say, wait a minute, this guy used to work for the FBI, right? Well, that's true. But one of the things you'll notice is we talk, at least my group, when I headed the National Computer Crime Squad, we talked to CPSR. We talked to EFF. We went to the CFP conferences. We did not go to DEF CON. We did not go to HoHoCon or any of the other conferences, HOPE, for instance. And I'll tell you why. because we felt that if we were there, not in a speaker capacity, that it would probably be inhibiting to the conference. Sound weird, right? Just law enforcement and the federal government saying this? Yeah. One of the things we seriously viewed that we had to understand was the right of people for freedom of speech and defending the Constitution. You heard Bob say FBI agents are not bad people. They aren't. Most of them are not out there, and most of them, and I say probably 99% of them, are not out there to trump over your rights. They're there to protect them, believe it or not. And that's why you didn't see us at things like 2600 meetings. Now, we will go as an invited speaker. And we're more than happy to do that. I'm more than happy to wear a t-shirt that says, I am a Fed, albeit retired. Had I been invited 2 years ago, I would have worn the same t-shirt. It just would have gotten 1 point instead of half a point, right? And you could have thrown me out faster, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, that's part of what this whole thing is about, everybody having access to the net. The problem is, and you heard this raised by Bob in the previous speaker, are intruders into networks a threat to government? Does anybody not think this is let me put it this way. Do you think this is a legitimate concern on the part of government when you're moving information across the public networks? Do you want your tax return picked off and distributed throughout the world? Do you want me to get to your medical records that you might be taking a medication that you need and change the prescription? Now, the government doesn't have a concern in all of those. Well, basically, in almost all those fields, it really does. So it has a legitimate concern out there. Probably what it began to realize was how big a problem it really was. What's the answer on the part of government to fix it? Anybody want to take a guess? It's called pass laws, right? Now, I've taken the unusual statement as a former government employee. Guess what? Ain't going to work. And we already heard somebody mention it. See, that's why I didn't come with a prepared speech. And I threw out the overheads because everything changes, and especially when you're 3 and 4 down the line. Are we talking about a network that is strictly in Washington, D.C., or strictly in Las Vegas? That all went out the window, 5 years ago, easily? It's all gone. It's a global network. The U.S. cannot pass a law that means squat. That's the reality. Now, Congress is not going to hear that. And they're not going to hear it for another 2 or 3 years. They're going to pass the laws. They're going to pass the laws in reaction to the Oklahoma City thing because somebody used the internet to put something out or used somebody else's network or even a BBS. They're going to pass the laws. A lot of them are not going to be good. How many people think people on Capitol Hill know anything about networks and Unix? They think it's great. They got a web page out there, home page on the web. Big deal. So what we're going to have, we're going to have a problem with the laws. The big problem is we sat here and said the U.S. is going to be the leader. Well, let me suggest to you the U.S. is not the leader when it comes to networks. First place, if you look at the status of digital networks in the U.S., where are we? At best, probably 50%. At best. Anybody know where England stands? UK? It's about 90, I think it's around 98% was the last figure I hear. Anybody want to dispute that? France, it's been 100% since when? And we're the leader? Come on. Who's had anti-encryption legislation in place? I don't know when they passed theirs. France, for how many years? At least 5. You're starting to see other countries model their legislation after France. Netherlands was going to pass something. It got bogged up. I don't know where it stands now. Last I heard, it was down the tubes, at least temporarily. So what you're seeing is legislation against all these things develop. Is it going to be good? Probably not. It's going to be reactionary. You've already heard that. This is not, I think, for those of us who are in the user community as individuals, not our primary concern. And I think your primary concern should be industry and the commercial world. Who's going to have the bigger clout when all gets said and done? When it comes to government, there are three things I think government has a real need to protect. And I'll jump back up here again, at least to keep your eyes bobbing around. One is military secrets, number one. And the intelligence community has legitimate stuff that they need to protect, right? And I think most of us would concede those things. Beyond that, you start getting into question mark areas. The question now becomes is, this internet and all the networks and the interconnectivity that we got used to over the last 5 years, who is now catching on to this ball game, so to speak? Industry, right? Industry puts a whole different set of requirements out there. Okay, touchy issue Bob raised. Hire a hacker, and by that, I guess I'm saying intruder, hire an intruder at this point to secure networks. Anybody, now, by the way, I work for a company called iNet now, and what we try to do is go out and help clients before they have a problem, move their networks from what I call the 95% of the world that's not secure over to the 5% that's got something going for it. Anybody want to hazard a guess when I say we want to do penetration testing in your network, what the first question is? Who are you going to use? And here's one question I asked. We went into one company at the request of the CEO, and it was over an issue that I didn't think was a major issue, but he did. But the system administrators were reading corporate management and legal counsel's email. My question to him was, don't you understand that every system administrator can do that? And the answer was, we never thought about it. So essentially, my company went and did an emergency takeover of the entire MIS department over a weekend, knocked everybody off route, privileged access to everything, LANs all the way up through the WANs was taken over by my company. And then it was gradually turned back. One of the persons that was actually running the PBX, one person in the whole company asked the right question. She looked at me and she said, we're giving you the keys to the... Back to that mic again. We're giving you the keys to our entire company. Why should we trust you? Really good question. Whenever you get in to start doing penetration testing, you start getting the underbelly of whoever you're after. The same thing any number of us do when we're intruding on our own. You get to the underbelly. This is what scares people. This is what scares company. It also scares government, I think, too. You know what my answer was? Worked out beautifully in this case because I told her, I said, everybody that works for me and will be doing this has a U.S. government clearance of secret or higher. And I looked at her and I said, what's yours? And she didn't have one. Now, does that mean that a U.S. government clearance makes you great and not having one doesn't make you great? The answer is no. But what would my answer have been if I was using people that didn't have something accredited by somebody? This is scary for a company if your answer is, I don't know why you should trust me. Just trust me. You know, the famous words, trust me. Right? Doesn't work. The thing that I think we're going to see in industry, and I'm going to wrap this thought up here shortly and let you ask any question you want in any field, including some of the stuff back in the law enforcement days. The thing that's really important is industry's got to have a mechanism to secure their information. This is a real example with a major company in New York City. And think about this for a minute. What I asked them was, I said, would you take a file cabinet with your corporate secrets about the formulations for a chemical, which is your business, put it in a file cabinet, and sit it in the middle of Times Square with the drawer open? answer is, of course not. Then I come back and say, but aren't you doing this electronically? And everybody says, of course we are. Now, the problem is this with business. Business's answer to the problem is, it's got to be cheap, transparent, and user-friendly. If it doesn't meet those three qualifications, guess what? I can go into a client and suggest to them $1 million worth of suggestions on how to secure your network and essentially make it where, you know, 95% of the world trying to break into that system will just say, oh, shucks, and go into something else. Will they ever spend $1 million? No. Nobody. Matter of fact, one thing interesting, when I was with the FBI, we actually had companies tell us, we'll take a $1 million hit before we call law enforcement. $1 million. That's for some major companies, that's chump change. But for a lot, a PBX fraud, and this was one of the problems with PBX frauds back in the days when it was really popular and going on, they get a $200,000 bill from U.S. West, and guess what? They're out of business. You know, for an IBM, an AT&T, or, you know, major Mitsubishi, you know, $200,000 telephone bill is probably one day. For ABC Ironworks, it's probably their annual gross, or certainly their annual profit, that just got wiped out in one weekend. So that was the reason why, and you saw there, business drove changes to the system. It drove the way the carriers responded to clients. And by the way, that's one thing we're telling business right now. Don't accept the vendor's answer is, we don't care what you want. When they want 24 remote dial-up access into that system of yours, tell them, no, you're not going to get it. When you want it, you call up and we'll plug the modem in at that point. The second thing is, you do not let them use their vendor password, which we all know in this room, that if you've got a certain kind of switch, the password is the same for every single switch with that model number, right? So we're telling clients, stand up to the vendors, make them do things. I don't want to pick on Cisco, but almost everybody knows that Cisco has no security sitting on routers. What are we seeing coming out now? And I think secure computing has got, I know they got the challenge, and I think they're going to be here to discuss it sometime during the conference. They got a challenge to break into their routers. There are other companies out there that are developing routers that include encryption, network monitoring, and one other thing I was trying to think of, and it just skipped my mind. But anyway, the same price is what a single router out of one of the major manufacturers costs with absolutely nothing on it. So what are you starting to see? Business is pushing a lot of these changes. Well, guess what? Encryption's a problem for the government. DigiCash is going to be a problem for the government. You haven't even started to see anybody wake up to that issue yet. Those are going to be huge problems. The question I raise to you, who's going to reign supreme in all this over the next 3 years? We really have three entities we need to think about out in this thing. And I think what it's going to take is a lot more interaction between all the different groups to get something that's going to work for everybody. And I'm not even sure there is something that's going to work for everybody. The individual user out there today may get squeezed. You know, university accounts, even universities are starting to talk about tightening up systems. And by the way, the good news in all this mess is there are a lot of companies that are going to companies like mine and other ones and asking for help. Not to tear their systems apart, but to try to get them where there's some security on them. I don't think government's going to be the major player in encryption. And I'll tell you where I think encryption's going to wind up is just where France is on a global basis. It's one of the few policies that makes sense. And what you'll probably start to see eventually are laws that say something about, it's like if you rob a bank, you rob it with a gun, you get one sentence. If you rob it without a gun, you get another. You'll probably see an encryption. If you use encryption to commit a criminal offense, you get an additional 5 years tacked onto your sentence. Why do I say that? First place, Congress can pass a law that makes encryption illegal by a private individual or a company, as far as that goes. How in the hell is anybody going to enforce it? Where are the borders? Where do you put customs? Where do you put FBI, Secret Service, local police department? It's just an impossible task. So that's where I see that going. Where are individual users, how do you want to, not access, I guess access is a better word. Where is that going to wind up? It's going to get squeezed, is my opinion. You have organizations out there that will help you protect some of that, but I think between government and industry, if you're not careful, you will get squeezed out of the picture. The telephony bills are an interesting issue that get raised on all this, you know, allowing long-distance companies and the other companies, the local carriers, to get competing against each other. It's going to be some real interesting times out here in the next 3 years. And the real question is going to be to wind up, and this is what you got to be careful about, is who owns that network system. I'm talking about everything. And make sure that includes everybody, because everybody, I think, has a legitimate function out there. Now, I'm going to throw this open to questions, because I think you have more questions that hit the particular interest of yours, and it can hit on any topic. I may have to say I can't, I may be retired, but I will not discuss some things that we did when I was active. Yes?
You talked about even now universities starting to censor email. Don't you think that's a reaction to the fear out there that, that Congress or the law enforcement with the laws that Congress passed are going to take them down if they don't? You know, isn't this really a fear thing where Congress and the laws that they're trying to use in reaction to things that have been going on are coercing the universities and places like that to rein this stuff in by censorship?
Okay. There were a lot of questions tied in there. I'll try to get to some of them. Basically, the question was, with the censorship of email, is that because of a fear of government laws, retaliation type thing, if nothing's done? The answer to that, I think, basically is yes. What I would caution is don't overreact. But the problem, which is one of the ones I raised years ago, was if somebody doesn't start talking about some standards and some basic ethics, well, I didn't raise the basic ethics issue, but I would agree with it. If some of these issues aren't addressed out there, what you do have to fear is government laws being passed. It will be a reaction. Should it be? The answer is no. Real tough issues to address. The problem is universities don't want to address it, business doesn't want to address it until there's a problem. That's not really the way to do it. The way to do it is get all the parties in, and one of the things I strongly recommended when I was in the FBI is you get outside organizations who have different views in, and actually we did that. We had them come to our in-services and talk to our people so that we understood what other people's thinking was about issues. And believe it or not, I mean, most agents will go out there and say, I'll flat put it to you, 2600 should be illegal. You'll find a lot of law enforcement believes that. The answer is, and the first speaker raised it, Bruce, that where have people been? The Supreme Court's already ruled. You can publish a book that says how to build a nuclear bomb. You can publish anything you wanted. That was 1960-something, I think. Was that late? I thought it was before that. I thought it was way before that. Supreme Court's already ruled on this issue. It's what's the issue? You can publish anything you want to. You can publish how to illegally break into a system. It's out there. I know it. You know it. I can almost guarantee you I know the worst that can happen out there today. And the reality is does the rest of the world know about it? No. Are Bob going to make a difference? Would I have made a difference on the inside? No, because they don't understand the technology. I don't know what the long-term answer to that is. Did that get to the heart of your question? You had a couple more in there, and I forgot what they were. Anybody else want to? You don't get a break for lunch. It's 3 o'clock before that happens. Yes?
Yeah. $350,000 of flip-flop fraud on their watch. And that was a pure BS that I personally helped program along. What role does the government have ensuring that Pacific Bell will provide $5 padlock for all the cans between the mic switch and their switch? Would you call them?
Okay. Let's try to get the question a little succinct. Basically, what's the government roles in securing the physical plant, and we could extend that probably to the physical hardware and wiring that goes between sites and stuff so that there's a secure system. This we could probably debate about for the next 2 hours. My personal opinion is the government's role is zero. Who does that responsibility reside with? You know who the telephone company listens to best? 50,000 customers screaming their heads off. You want to know what my explanation on United Airlines was when I got off that plane? I walked, first place, I said something to the flight attendant, asked for a comment card, was told they didn't have one. That was a clue. I told him, I said, my personal opinion is if there had been dogs riding on this airplane, the SPCA would have been here and shut this airline down and marched everybody off the plane. All the dogs, that is. So, where do we stand with 50,000 customers? Oh, by the way, I was the only one to complain that I know of. I went to the ticketing agent and asked for the address to mail to corporate headquarters, not to their station agent. Where were 100 other people on that airplane? I would suggest to you what you got to do is you got to get all your customers, and you're seeing the vendor community starting to respond to the security issues. The only reason they're responding is not because the government says they have to. You know, the problem and the whole reason the digital telephony bill came up was not because the telephone system decided to build a secure telephone system. Does anybody in here believe they did it for that reason? Of course, no. They did it because they could get more stuff down the pipe. More telephone conversations, speed things up, more money. They had absolutely enough, you know, if I talk to them, they can't anymore suck something off in the middle of, once it leaves the pad, than law enforcement can. How do you monitor your systems if you're running a telephone system and you can't determine whether the traffic's actually going through or not? To me, they got a problem too. But the answer is everybody's got to stand up and say, this is not right, this is what we want. Then your companies who are supplying the hardware and software start to listen. They're not going to listen to law enforcement, they're not going to listen. You know who they'll listen to in the U.S. government? DOD. Anybody want to know why? Bucks. Billions of dollars for electronic stuff every year. They will listen. They will listen to the big corporations of this company. They'll listen to the small ones if they get together through their associations. Yes? Okay, basically the question was that he's seen more examples where they would prosecute rather than fix the problem. If you don't mind, I would like to disagree. Frankly, what we saw was exactly the opposite. What I've seen both on the commercial side and the government's and the law enforcement side is exactly the opposite. And the reason is there's a variety of reasons. One is they may not be able to fix the problem, but to prosecute it is an admission to the public and to the world that they got a problem. They're not going to do it for stock reasons, number one. Number two is embarrassment. Number three is they just ain't going to do it. It's got to be really, really bad. Give you an example, in the MOD investigation, which my group did the technical review on the wiretaps, and most of the other technical wiretaps that were done, by that I mean data, not voice. And in that particular case, and I've heard it in other ones, so I'm not going to pinpoint, but the carriers were actually told afterwards in some of their large carrier meetings that you don't want to be a media event. And that's the way it was described. By reporting to law enforcement, you become a media event. Frankly, I think, and this argument should be, and I heard somebody mention, maybe it was Bruce, or Somebody said everything should be reported and it should be made public. And the answer is yes. What in the hell are we all hiding in secret for? This is not something new. The financial world went through this years ago. Every world that's ever been invented, including cars, has gone through the same process. It does not help to keep things secret. Although I will throw in one thing. One of the scariest things out there to me is that probably close to 100% of intrusions are not detected by anybody. That is a huge, huge problem. And I know what certain governments can do. And one of the easy ones is, you know, one of the former Soviet Union countries had a software program that you just, basically it was like Satan, except it went one step farther. It found the hole and then launched an automated attack. That was being sold anywhere in the world several years ago. If they had that then, if they had that that was being publicly offered, what did they have that we didn't know about? Obviously, in my opinion, something much, much better. I would hope they had some. I would hope we had something much, much better. I'm not sure we do. You had your hand up first, and then I'll come to you. What we do, and I think one of the real suggestions made was get to the media people here, let them know what your thoughts are and what you think ought to be done. I hate to say this, but the congressmen do pass the laws. They're an obvious one to get to. Probably to do that effectively, you have to do it through a group, realistically. But individually, you can get to people you know in the media and get that perspective out there as to what needs to be done. And I totally agree with you. It's our government. And I'll tell you, I was in Canada last week in Ottawa, and this absolutely blew my mind. They walked us straight through their two houses of parliament chambers, no guards, no metal detector, no concrete barriers, no bunker mentality. And, you know, I'm sitting there saying, what in the world? You go to Washington, D.C., and it's like, we're bunkered down. What for? First place, it's our government, your government. Get out there and have your views heard. By the way, if you think law enforcement is going to come down on you for that, forget it. It ain't going to happen. Now, granted, I'll not sit there and say that out of 10,000 agents, you won't run across one in the FBI that might do something that I would think is totally off base. But I didn't see it in 26 years. And if somebody started to, there was somebody else right beside them that grabbed them and said, forget it. And there's stuff that's personally offensive to you, but it's not illegal. This is a free country. Take advantage of it. Did that answer your question, by the way, without ducking it? I would suggest to you most corporations don't care about security, period, electronically. They will guard the doors. The other thing is, I don't see them pushing. I have never seen them pushing to legislate security on networks. I just haven't seen. I never saw it. One of the things, even in the Department of Justice, when they were proposing legislation, we tried to get private industry involved in that, and it was We played hell getting them involved in it. And I don't see that as, I don't see them, I agree with you, those are the answers, but nobody's doing it. And it's passing, well, I don't agree that passing laws is the answer. That's not the answer. But as far as wanting security, I just don't see it. I've seen more companies start to look at it, but the companies that are starting to look at it, and I think it's from the liability issues, the I'm going to be sued business, what they're looking for, how many companies, government is only looking for one thing when you do security reviews, a report. No correction of the problem, just a report. Here are your problems. Are they probably going to fix any one of them? I would say probably the odds of that happening are zero. In an industry, it's going to depend on how much it costs. And the thing you got to remember about industry has one motto. Security, whether it's physical security or electronic security, is not a profit center. It does not make a money. It costs money. So guess where your money goes? It goes into your profit centers, not into your what they call loss centers. So there's a problem. Even in industry, but we are starting to hear more companies say, we're not interested in a report, we're interested in the correction, fix the problem. We're hearing more of that. That's good news. But we're not seeing it so much from the government side. Does that get to your question? I didn't repeat the question because it was so long. I didn't get to what you wanted, right? Okay. Yes, it is cheaper. It's cheaper to have a system that the user's stupid. I agree. By the way, one question I do want to address is why would a company not hire somebody that's been convicted of intruding in the networks? Let's take that as the worst case scenario. Here's the problem I have from the corporate side when we're doing penetration testing. I'm looking at who I would bring in to do that type of work. They work at night. Surprise, right? They work on their own. In most cases, my employees do it out of their house. Is there any corporate management present? No. If I had to have somebody standing there over their head, then I don't need them. I'd do it. Not that I don't assume to be the world's greatest intruder. As a matter of fact, I probably couldn't get past ground zero with a lot of people in this room. But there's the problem. The problem is once you get into what you're authorized to penetrate into, you start seeing all these other little jewels sitting off to the side. Like Internal Revenue Service or other little goodies that are out there. What I have to have is a person that I can count on will stop right there. Because if he goes one step farther, he just broke a law. And he did an intrusion into somebody's network that we did not have permission to go into. And by the way, some weird things happen with your clients. We had one actually try to tell us to break into a telecommunications carrier because they were providing their telecommunications service. We looked at him and said, you think we're dumb? The answer is not only no, but hell no. Now, if you can get them to sign a letter from Sprint or GTE or whoever it was saying we're authorized to hack their network, great, we'll do it. So that's some of the other issues I thought I'd raise with that. No, it is... Corporations are not looking generally to secure their systems. It's money, and it's too much. Any money is too much money. And that's why one of the problems is with the whatever the vendors come up with, what are you going to do if you come up? Let's take the instance of a router, for instance, to a company. I got some companies I'm working with that got 200 routers in their network. If you got to replace all 200 routers with IE secure computing routers, guess what the cost of that's going to be? Is it a practical solution? No, not at all. You're talking about somewhere in the range of almost $1 million, plus all the time to switch it out and everything else.
If
One quick question. That's it? I will be around. Feel free to grab me offline over here or around, and we'll talk. How about that?
Going to give us about 2 or 3 minutes to get the video up and the sound coming in over the PA system. And while we're doing that, the problem with giving you 10 minutes for a coffee break is it turns into a 30-minute break. And so I just prefer to people come and go when they want to take their own break. That's easier. Okay, I want to give away first. Someone spotted a Fed. She's sitting in the back of the room. She's standing on the side. You are the lucky person. Go and identify your Fed. Where is he? He's grinning. No, not you. You keep trying, but it's not going to work. He's from the, where are you from? And who are you? What are you doing here? Okay, that's respectable. Uh-oh. Come on down.
I know how to write a resume. Here's my resume. Does this work?
I've been handed some intelligence on the person. He was spotted last night and we just got it all together today. It's Ernie Leggett, U.S. Customs Intelligence Analyst. His assignments involve Air Force, NSA Headquarters Electronic Security Command, phone and radio monitoring, communications and jamming, 8 years of intelligence working in Europe, customs, he's had experience in criminal casework, in narcotics, money laundering, computer support, and intelligence work, and technology applications. He's currently assigned Headquarters, what the heck is that? At the bottom, assigning Headquarters versus Customs Washington. Oh, U.S. Customs in Washington. Oh, yeah. He's taking a course in calligraphy and writing. His dog's name is Muffy. Sorry. Okay, here's another giveaway. You're either going to boo or you're going to cheer, because there's nobody in between on this issue, OS2. Don't tell me you run wind blows. Okay, here we go. Ticket.
Ticket.
653. What? Who said that? You're kidding me. One of the net ninjas back here. And what else do I have to give away? I've got something else. What do I have? No, I already gave away the cell phone. I'm keeping the gig drive for tomorrow. Someone donated a gig drive. We're giving that away tomorrow. What else do we have to give away? Oh, before John... Okay, we'll hold off on that. Okay, I'm not going to give away any more now. I want to give some away after the next speaker, which is Wynn. Do we have the audio working? Oh, good. We're using an old version of OS2 2.0 to prop up the video projector. That's all it's good for, yeah. He's stringing up the audio. Run. So you think it's on the DSU at Intermind's end, or? Oh, you have a signal?
Yeah, but they're only charging for the T-span. The T-span's fine, and their smart check's fine. DSU back out, and their stuff's going to be a problem.
Okay.
We're going to go through the little parameters, the whole box again, check it.
Are you talking with the people on their end?
They won't come in, but yeah, it'll work on weekend.
Okay.
We need to talk to the lawyer.
Oh, okay. Working on it. We're going to just give us a couple of minutes. What's that?
Tell jokes.
Do a dance. Maybe I'll get some more things to give away. Maelstrom. Can you go grab some stuff to throw into the audience to appease the natives? See, this is good because all the bored people leave and then the dedicated ones get all the cool stuff. Oh, you notice Wynn's wearing this yellow shirt? I heard a story about it. There's only 25 of them in the world, and Bill Clinton has one of them. It's the elite yellow shirt. Information Warfare School? So it's spelled backwards. It should be school, S-W-I. Oh, I guess Rob's got one. So two elites. Oh, but did the Sidewinder people want to say anything? Get the Sidewinder guy up here. I'd like some fries, a large Coke, apple juice, I'm starting to sound like Bootleg when he's drunk. More drinks.
Water?
Okay. You know what? It's like a union hotel, and we were told that if we bring in outside food, they come in, like, get all nasty. So I bet we could bring a pizza truck up this back, though, where they couldn't see it or something. Okay, here we go. We have a thick net transceiver. I would throw this into the audience, but it could kill. So I'll do this the ticket way. 614. Do you need the transceiver? Mount it on your desk. Yeah, some guy last year pulled that one off. One of something that he didn't have the ticket for. Okay, who got the OS2 stuff? Here's the OS2 Warp Software, second edition, 1995.
Wild West.
Is it up? Okay, here we go. First of all, who wants it? Oh, so that's pretty evenly distributed, so I just couldn't throw it in the air. Okay. Well, I will throw it in the air. How's that? It's going right down the middle, so jockey yourself. Okay, here, wait. Okay, give people the setup time. Here we go.